You're the only one left. No! Red yelled. I lied. I'm the only one with the true authority. It's called the Red Riding Hood Kingdom, not the Hoodian Republic. The evil smirk came back to the Enchantress's face. Then I suggest you proceed, she demanded. Red's eyes filled with tears. She never thought she'd be robbed of her own most prized possession on the journey, her kingdom. I, Queen Red, Red started, but her voice trailed off. Yes, get on with it, Esmia ordered.
I, Red continued with difficulty. I willingly hand over my kingdom to...
Hey, Esmia, said a voice behind Red. Everyone looked up to see Alex at the front of the Colosseum. She was panting and sweaty. She had just climbed up the pillar.
Alex,
Charlotte gasped. The Enchantress was infuriated to be interrupted when Red was so close to finishing.
Who is this?
She asked Rumpelstiltskin.
I don't know, Rumpelstiltskin said. I've never seen her before.
Alex made her way farther into the Colosseum. She was out of breath and so tired from the climb she could barely stand.
Little girl, if I were you, I would turn back around and throw myself to the ground, Esmia yelled. Trust me, it'll be much less painful than what I'm about to do to you.
I'm not afraid of you, Alex yelled.
The Colosseum went dead silent. Even the fire seemed to burn quieter.
What did you say?
The Enchantress said blankly. Alex knew the time had come to leave her mark, and she didn't have much time to leave it in.
I said I'm not afraid of you, she repeated. I've dealt with girls like you my entire life. You want everything because nothing will make you happy. You're not an all-powerful and terrifying enchantress, Esmia. You're just a brat. And no matter who you kill or what you conquer, people will always pity and laugh at you because of it.
The entire Colosseum held its breath. Esmia maintained her stoic expression, but everyone knew she was outraged beyond belief, because her hair flickered violently above her head and small flames burned straight out of her eyes. The Enchantress left her throne and slowly strolled over to Alex. Alex reached into her satchel. She could feel the Wand of Wonderment activate itself in her hand. She had succeeded in taking Esmia's pride.
Well, I hope that little display was worth it, Esmia said, because it's the last thing you'll ever do.
The Enchantress pointed her finger at her, and with a bright violet flash, Alex was blasted out of the Colosseum and into the sky.
Alex!
Connor screamed from on the wall. It happened so fast, Alex wasn't sure what had happened. The last thing she heard was her brother's scream. The last thing she saw was a bright flash, and then the Colosseum suddenly became smaller and smaller as she soared further and further into the air. Everything around her, her sight, her sound, and all her other senses, went black. It was as if Alex had fallen into a very, very deep sleep. Chapter 27 The Dream. Alex slowly opened her eyes one at a time. She was lying on the ground facing a dark ceiling. She didn't know where she was and didn't remember how she had gotten there, but got to her feet to look around. Alex was standing in a dark cave. A lantern was on the ground beside her. She picked it up and journeyed deeper into the cave. There was something about this place that Alex found very comforting. Despite its darkness and mystery, for whatever reason, she knew she was safe. Up ahead, she saw a light. She continued toward the light, and two large boulders came into view. Two little girls were standing on the top of the boulders, and two were standing beside them. As she got closer, she was able to make out what they were wearing. The first little girl wore a sweater, a skirt, and a headband, just like Alex. The second little girl wore a long nightgown and no shoes. The third little girl wore a puffy dress with an apron over it. The fourth little girl had braided pigtails and wore silver shoes. All four of the girls stared blankly at Alex, as if they were waiting for her to say something.
Who are you? Alex asked the girls with a smile.
You know who we are, the little girl in the nightgown said.
Alex raised the lantern higher and took a second look at them.
I do? She asked. How do we know each other?
You know us, but we don't know you, said the girl in the silver shoes. She spoke with an adorable twang in her voice.
I'm afraid I don't, Alex said. You'll figure it out if you think about it long enough, said the girl in the sweater in a charming British accent.
You all look very familiar, Alex admitted. It's as if I met you before, or seen you in a movie, or read about you.
Alex gasped. Wait a second. Are you who I think you are?
The girls shared the same amused smile.
Hello,
I'm Lucy Pevensey, said the girl in the sweater, and curtsied.
I'm Alice, said the girl in the apron.
I'm Dorothy Gale, said the girl with braids.
And I'm Wendy Darling, darling, the one in the nightgown said.
Alex couldn't believe what she was seeing.
But you're the girls I grew up reading about, she said. I used to pretend I was you when I was little. All I ever wanted was to be one of you and escape into my own magical world.
Sounds like you got what you wanted, Alice said.
Alex lowered her head and looked at the floor. Alice was right, but it was impossible for Alex to be happy about it anymore.
What's the matter, dear? Wendy asked.
Alex sighed.
I used to think the Land of Stories was a paradise. It was my own personal safe haven, she told them. But now an evil enchantress has taken over all the kingdoms.
Oh, my, said Lucy. Sounds like the White Witch.
Worse, Alex said, and put it into terms they could understand. She's got the White Witch's greed, the Wicked Witch of the West's anger, the Queen of Hearts' temper, and Captain Hook's vengeance. All the girls shook their heads and showed their sympathy.
That's horrible, Wendy said.
Greed and anger and temper, oh my, Dorothy said. Can you meld her?
I wish, Alex said with a laugh.
Can Aslan prance on her? Lucy asked.
No, unfortunately, Alex said.
Can you feed her to a crocodile? Wendy asked.
I don't think so, Alex said.
But then how are you going to defeat her?
Alice asked.
My friends and I are building a powerful wand, Alex said.
She excitedly reached for the satchel to show them, but it wasn't around her shoulder.
Oh, no. Where's my wand? I just had it a second ago.
She moved the lantern around, scanning the ground of the cave, looking for a place she might have dropped it. The other girls giggled at her attempts. Alex looked up at them and slowly realized why they found her efforts so amusing.
Is this a dream or am I dead? She asked.
Of course it's a dream, Lucy said.
Why else do you think we're here?
Alice asked.
I hope a big cave isn't what you think heaven looks like, Dorothy said.
Alex was happy to hear it.
The last thing I remember was being blasted into the sky, she said. But how did I survive the fall?
Did your wand save you? Lucy asked.
Of course, Alex exclaimed. The wand makes whoever's holding it invincible. It was in my hand the entire time. The enchantress didn't kill me after all.
The girls cheered, but then Dorothy went silent.
Are you going to kill the enchantress with the wand now? Dorothy asked.
Alex hadn't really thought about that. She'd been so concerned with getting the wand finished, she had never thought about what she would do after the wand was made. How was she going to go about defeating the enchantress with the wand? Was she going to have to kill her with it? Was Alex even capable of killing someone? She always figured Jack or Goldilocks would do it if that's what was needed.
I suppose I don't have a choice, Alex said.
I'd recommend finding another way if there is one, Dorothy said with a sad look on her face. Even though melting the witch was an accident, I felt awful about it ever since.
What Dorothy said resonated with Alex more than she was letting on. She didn't want to hurt anyone, but how could she stop Esmea without killing her? Would Esmea just find another way to cheat death like she had after Evely poisoned her?
I don't have to necessarily kill Esmea, Alex said, thinking out loud. I just have to take away her powers. And her powers come from a place of hate and anger, so if I took away the reasons that validated her right to be angry, she would be powerless.
Alex excitedly jumped up and down, pleased to have come up with an alternative way. The girls clapped for her.
Violence is never the answer, Wendy said. I always try to tell John and Michael that when they play in the nursery, but they never listen to me. When you figure out how to take away her hate and anger, would you let me know?
Alice asked. I'd like to know in case I run into the Queen of Hearts again. Alex went silent as the wheels on her head were turning.
I think I know how to do it, she said, and her eyes darted back and forth from one side to the other. And I may not even need the wand to do it after all.
So you just finished a huge journey only to find out what you needed was with you all along? Dorothy asked.
Been there. Alex thought about it. The wand might not have been the solution, but it was still useful. It still had saved her life. It had also given them hope, and without that, they would have been lost for sure. She looked up at the girls and around the cave.
Now I understand the meaning of this dream, she said. Deep down, I knew I could never kill the enchantress, so I was searching for another way. The cave represents my questioning, and you represent the answer, because ever since I was a little girl, I have always thought about you when I had a problem.
Why is that?
Alice asked her. I suppose I've learned so much from you, Alex said. I always wanted to be as loving as Wendy, or as curious as Alice, or as brave as Lucy, or as adventurous as Dorothy. I always saw a little bit of myself when I read about each of you.
All the girls smiled at her.
We're happy we could help, Lucy said. And we'll always be here if you need us, Wendy said.
Alex nodded thankfully to them.
Is there anything else on your mind we could help you with? Dorothy asked, since we happen to be lingering in your subconscious.
Actually, now that you mention it, there is something I've always wanted to ask you if I ever got the chance, Alex said.
She didn't know what had caused her to believe she would ever have the chance to ask literary characters a question, but she asked them nonetheless.
After seeing amazing magic places like Neverland, Oz, Narnia, and Wonderland, why did you ever want to leave?
The girls looked to one another. They'd never been asked the question before, at least in Alex's mind.
Because, no matter where you go or what you see, you'll always want to be where you belong, Lucy said.
Your home is where you feel most comfortable and loved, Wendy said. It's a part of you, Alice added. It's where your family is.
There's no place like home, Dorothy said, as if it was the first time she'd ever said those words.
Alex appreciated what they had to say, but wasn't sure if she entirely agreed.
I wonder, though, if home sometimes isn't where you're from, she said.
The girls looked at her as if she had already answered her own question. Alex wondered if that had been the real question lingering in her mind all along.
Alex! Alex! Said a familiar voice.
Alex looked all around the cave, but couldn't tell where it was coming from.
What's happening?
Alex asked the girls, but they had disappeared.
Alex! Are you hurt? Please wake up!
The voice pleaded, and the more it did, the more the cave around her disappeared. Alex awoke on the ground. This time, she was outside. She saw the sky and the tops of trees above her, as well as the face of a concerned and balding man looking down at her.
Bob?
Alex asked and sat up.
You're alive, Bob said, with teary eyes and hugged her. It's a miracle. I just saw you fall from the sky. You might be in shock. Let me check your heart.
Bob grabbed hold of Alex's wrist and checked her pulse.
I wonder if there's an intensive care unit somewhere in this kingdom, he said. Bob, I'm fine. Look, Alex said. Her hand was still clutching the wand. It's the Wand of Wonderment. I was holding on to it and it saved me.
Bob looked at her like she was speaking a different language.
Is it wrong that I'm still surprised by all this?
Alex jumped to her feet. She could see the Enchantress's pillar in the distance. The sky above it was filling more and more with the black smoke from the fire.
I've got to get back there, Alex said.
Back there? Bob asked in amazement.
Wait, are you telling me that's where you fell from?
Yes, and now I have to get back, Alex said. I just don't have time to go by foot.
Then how are you supposed to get back there? Bob said.
Alex looked down at the wand, and then back to him.
I think I have an idea, she said,
and a sly smile appeared on her face. Bob backed away from her.
I don't like the turn this conversation has suddenly taken, he said.
Chapter 28. The Greatest Magic of All. The Enchantress frantically paced back and forth in front of her throne. Her hair anxiously swayed above her.
Say it again, she demanded.
But I've already said it 10 times, Red said, still kneeling before the fire.
You will say it 100 times if that's what I ask of you,
Esmia yelled. Red did what she was told.
I, Queen Red Riding Hood of the Red Riding Hood Kingdom, give my kingdom to you, she said.
Esmia looked at the fire and waited for a change, but it remained the same, just as high and just as strong. The Enchantress slammed her hands on the arms of her chair.
What's wrong, Esmia?
Rumpelstiltskin asked.
It's not working, she screamed. I don't understand. I've been working on this for centuries. I had everything I needed.
Charlotte was sobbing hysterically in the birdcage.
You horrible, horrible, horrible creature, she cried. How could you do that to a girl?
I told you to shut up, woman,
Esmia yelled at her. She could barely think. Charlotte continued her sobs, mourning louder in spite of Esmia's screaming. As far as Charlotte knew, her daughter was dead, and she was never coming back. Connor had been in shock since it had happened, but as he watched the Enchantress struggle, his spirit started to rise. Esmia needed all 7 of the deadly sins and the air of magic to activate the portal. Maybe his sister had successfully taken her pride. Maybe she had finished the wand and was alive.
That dreadful witch Agatha must have lied to me, Esmia yelled. The fire should have grown into a portal into the other world as soon as I conquered the past, present, and future, and mastered the 7 deadly sins. Lust, envy, sloth, greed, gluttony, wrath, and pride.
A strange look came to Esme's face as she thought on the spell's ingredients. She looked at the spot where Alex had been standing when she was blasted into the sky. To everyone's surprise, a giant smile suddenly appeared on Connor's face.
"What's the matter, Esmea?" Connor said. "Did a little girl take away your pride?"
The enchantress jerked her head toward him like a hawk finding its prey.
"What did you just say?"
Esmea said sharply.
"Connor, what are you doing?"
Froggy whispered to him.
"Don't make her angrier,"
Jack said. Connor ignored them.
"I said, a little girl took away Esmea the Enchantress's pride," he called out so everyone in the Coliseum could hear him. "That's why you can't complete your spell."
A whispered murmur spread through the Coliseum between the kings and queens. Was Connor just taunting her, or was there truth to what he said?
"Silence," Esmea ordered them. "If you think my pride could be taken from me, you're all insulting your own intelligence. Bring the boy to me."
The vines lifted Red back against the wall and placed Connor in front of the fire.
"No!" Charlotte yelled. "Don't you dare hurt him!"
"Butterboy!"
Trobella yelled. Connor wasn't afraid.
"Are you going to kill me too?" he asked.
"As a matter of fact, I am," the enchantress said.
"Oh, good one," Connor said spitefully. "Way to make yourself feel better, Esmea. Killing another innocent child really shows how prideful you are. What are you going to do next, club a couple baby seals?"
The enchantress had had enough of him.
"Any final words?" she said.
Connor had to think about it, wanting to make whatever he said count.
"You're ugly and you smell bad," he said. "And where I come from, everyone thinks you're green with horns."
Esmea raised her hand in his direction. Connor braced himself.
"Esmea, look!"
Rumpelstiltskin yelled and pointed to the sky. Flying toward the Colosseum was a large white horse with massive wings. As it flew closer, everyone in the Colosseum gasped when they saw who was steering it.
"Alex!"
Connor screamed.
"You're alive!"
Charlotte screamed from the cage. The horse landed in the center of the Colosseum, and Alex jumped off its back. She commandingly raised the Wand of Wonderment and pointed it at the enchantress.
"Miss me?"
Alex said. The enchantress couldn't believe what she was seeing, as if her day could get any worse. She waved her hands, and the vines dragged Connor back against the wall.
"Alex, don't waste any time!"
Connor yelled as he was dragged off.
"Just zap her! Strike her dead!"
Esmea waved her hand again, and the vines covered Connor's mouth. The enchantress glanced sideways at Charlotte in the cage, and it all suddenly dawned on her. She wasn't the fairy godmother's granddaughter after all. Esmea slowly strode over to Alex, looking her up and down like she was an interesting piece of art.
"So, you're the fairy godmother's real granddaughter, I take it,"
Esmea said, and began circling her. Alex never lowered the wand. She was ready to strike if Esmea showed any sign of doing the same.
"It's interesting that we have so much in common," Esmea said. "We're both from the same place, we both have magic in our blood, and we both possess extraordinary ability."
"We're nothing alike," Alex snapped. "I could never do all the horrible things you've done."
A smile appeared on Esmea's face.
"That's where you're wrong," she said. "You see, I came into this world just like I'm assuming you did, full of excitement and promise. I wanted to do so much good work, help so many people, and give as much as I could to those who needed me. But then I learned a very harsh lesson. The world doesn't always give back. I'm not a tragic case of the world. I am the world. Cruel, unfair, and not a fairy tale. People are not born heroes or villains. They're created by the people around them. And one day, when your bright-eyed and bushy-tailed view of life gets its first taste of reality, when bitterness and anger first run through your veins, you'll discover that you are just like me, and it'll scare you to death."
Alex shook her head and gripped the wand even tighter.
"No, Esmea, I'll never be like you," she said. "Because I would rather have nothing and a big heart than everything and no heart at all."
Everything went quiet in the Colosseum. Esmea's hair was flowing above her out of control.
"Oh, snap!" Connor yelled. "You need some ointment for that burn, Esmea?"
Esmea waved her hand, and the vines covered Connor's mouth again.
You're brave with that wand in your hand, Esmia said to Alex. But I'd like to see you cross me with it out of reach.
Alex knew this was her moment. If she wanted to defeat the Enchantress for good, this might be her only chance.
Fine, Alex said, and tossed the wand to the ground. I don't need it.
The entire Colosseum gasped.
Alex, are you crazy? Connor yelled through the vines covering his mouth. Pick it back up! Pick it back up!
The Enchantress roared with laughter at Alex's carelessness.
You stupid girl, she said. You must have a death wish.
I don't need a wand to defeat you, Esmia, Alex said. Whether I have magic in my blood or not, I'll always have the most powerful magic of all inside me, compassion. And I have enough inside of me even for you.
What? The Enchantress said, amused by her foolishness.
Alex took a deep breath, praying what she was about to say would strip Esmia of her powers forever.
Esmia, on behalf of everyone in this room, I apologize for what the world put you through, and I forgive you for all the havoc you caused trying to heal, Alex said. I'm sorry your family was killed when you were a little girl. I'm sorry no one was there to comfort you when you had your heart broken over and over again. I'm sorry the fairies never showed you the kindness they showed everyone else, and I'm sorry you felt revenge was the only way you could piece yourself together again.
Everyone was looking back and forth between Alex and Esmia like they were at a tennis match. Connor covered his eyes, afraid he was about to watch his sister be killed for real this time. The Enchantress was taken aback by what Alex had to say. It had been the last thing she expected to come out of the girl's mouth. Esmia didn't know what to do but laugh. She threw her head back a number of times and let a malicious laugh erupt and grow from inside of her.
Apology not accepted, Esmia said.
She pointed her finger to Alex to blast her into the heavens again, but nothing happened. She pointed her finger again. Still, nothing was happening. Esmia tried with her other hand, but only got the same result. Esmia's hair gradually lost its magenta color and faded to gray, falling in her face one strand at a time. The fire in the crater diminished more and more by the second, until there was nothing left but skulls. The vines around the Colosseum squirmed like dying snakes, loosening their grip and releasing the people they held against the wall.
No! Esmia screamed. No, this is impossible!
The room watched in astonishment as magic slowly left the Enchantress's body and Esmia faded into an elderly and decrepit woman, too weak to stand on her own feet. The Enchantress had lost her power. Alex closed her eyes, and possibly for the first time all day, exhaled. She turned back to her brother as he brushed the limp vines off his body. He, along with everyone else in the Colosseum, stared at her with enough pride to knock off the ceiling had there been one. A 13-year-old girl in a headband had been able to do what none of the crowned monarchs could. As Esmia withered away, she fell to the floor and crawled on her hands and knees. A small cackle came from her as she grabbed hold of the Wand of Wonderment left on the floor.
Alex! Behind you!
Connor screamed. Alex turned to see Esmia pointing the wand directly at her. As she held the wand, her body and her magic were restored. Her hair flowed above her head. The fire in the crater ignited again, and the vines began to vibrate with life and started dragging people back onto the walls. Without time to think, Connor grabbed hold of Goldilocks' sword and ran toward his sister, slicing the vines as they tried seizing him. Esmia glared at Alex with an evil smile on her face and in her eyes.
Maybe I was wrong, the Enchantress said. Maybe I will have my own happily ever after all.
Alex froze where she stood, petrified to her core. She couldn't believe how quickly the situation had changed. In a matter of seconds, she had gone from victory to defeat. A bright blast shot out of the wand and toward her. Alex closed her eyes, knowing it was the end. This was how she was going to die.
No!
Rumpelstiltskin yelled. He came out of nowhere and jumped in front of Alex. The blast hit him in the chest, and he fell to the ground. Esmia watched in shock as the fatal blast meant for Alex had hit the only person she had ever considered a friend. Connor arrived at the Enchantress's side and sliced the Wand of Wonderment in half. The wand was destroyed, the magic drained from Esmia's body, and the enchantments around the Colosseum faded once again. Alex went to the floor and held Rumpelstiltskin's head up in her lap. Connor dropped down next to her, but there was nothing either of them could do.
You saved my life,
Alex said to the little man in her arms.
Why would you do that for me?
Rumpelstiltskin was gasping, and his eyes grew heavier by the second.
I just wanted my brothers to have something to be proud of, he grunted weakly.
He smiled up at the twins, closed his eyes for the last time, and died in Alex's arms.
Oh, no, Connor said. Poor little guy.
A heavy wheezing came from nearby. The twins looked across the floor to see Esmia crawling toward them. Her body was decaying and wilting at a speedy rate.
Looks like you've won, Esmia wheezed with difficulty.
Alex and Connor looked at each other, disgusted. Even as they held the body of her only acquaintance, all Esmia cared about was her legacy. They looked down at her with the most pitying eyes she had ever been viewed with.
No, Esmia, Alex said. No one wins when there's loss.
Esmia rolled onto her back and stared up at the smoky sky. With one last rattling breath, her body rotted away until there was nothing left of her but the memory of what she had been. With nothing to validate the anger that powered her livelihood, the Enchantress's body and soul disappeared, a casualty to compassion. The kings and queens and fairies brushed the vines off their bodies again and happily embraced one another. The nightmare was over, and their kingdoms were safe once again. King Chance and Cinderella held Princess Hope, and Cinderella wiped away tears of joy from her exhausted eyes. Sleeping Beauty wouldn't let go of King Chase. It was the first time in weeks they had seen each other. Snow White and King Chandler helped Rapunzel brush all the leaves out of her hair, which was a several-person effort. Red kissed Froggy repeatedly all over his big frog head. Jack tried dipping Goldilocks for a romantic kiss, but her fugitive reflexes caused her to flip him over her shoulder by accident. Trobella walked over to Connor.
Hey, listen, Trobella. I'm very flattered, but I'm not really interested in...
He started, but the Troll Queen silenced him again with an index finger pressed to his mouth.
No, Butterboy. Let me do all the talking, she said. I understand this day has been hard on you, watching the squishy girl almost die and then narrowly escaping death yourself. I just wanted to let you know, I'm in no rush for our wedding. Whether it's in 2 days or 2 weeks, I'll be waiting for you.
Thanks, Connor said.
Trobella winked at him and walked away, leaving him even more confused than ever before. The fairy council went to the glass jars in front of the golden chair and one by one opened the lids and released the souls trapped inside. The twins watched as the souls of the baker, the locksmith, and the soldier happily flew from the jars and disappeared into the sky above. Free at last. The spirits of the king and the musician hovered in the air behind the others, though, waiting to join the other spirits. The ghosts of Old Queen Beauty and Gloria floated into the Colosseum and up to their long-lost loves. They flew around, over, under, and through each other, finally reunited after centuries. Gloria and the musician looked to the twins and bowed thankfully to them before disappearing into the sky with the other spirits. The ghost of the king and Old Queen Beauty looked lovingly down and waved at Sleeping Beauty and King Chase before disappearing as well.
Who was that?
Sleeping Beauty asked her husband. King Chase looked up at the sky and smiled.
Well, I suppose there are guardian angels now.
Jack chopped through the lock on Charlotte's cage, and she ran to her children, throwing her arms around them.
Mom!
The twins said in unison.
I have never been so proud of you in my life, she tearfully exclaimed. That makes two of us, said a voice behind them.
The twins turned to see their grandmother. She had just been released from the jar and was back to being her old, solid self. The twins got to their feet and gave their grandmother an enormous hug, feeling so grateful they finally could. Grandma leaned over and looked proudly into Alex's and Connor's eyes.
You two amaze me more and more as you get older, she said lovingly to them. Your father would be so proud of you.
Alex and Connor smiled at each other, knowing that, wherever he was smiling down at them, too. The winged horse neighed loudly from the side of the Colosseum.
Hey, Alex, where did you find a flying horse? Connor asked.
Alex's happy grin suddenly faded.
Oh, no, I forgot about Bob, she yelled. Grandma, can you change him back for me?
The fairy godmother laughed. She retrieved her crystal wand from inside her robes and waved it in the horse's direction. A bright beam of light traveled from the tip of her wand and spun around the horse until he was regular Dr. Bob again. He shook his head and found his balance, dizzy from the transformation.
Bob, is that you? Charlotte gasped. What are you doing here?
I couldn't let you have all the fun, could I? He laughed. Charlotte ran to his side and kissed him. The twins had to look away.
You won't believe what he went through, Connor told his mom. He was almost eaten by bears and sharks, and he was captured by the sea witch, and...
And we'll let him tell you all about it,
Alex said, while dragging her brother away. She figured it was best to give them some privacy. The twins and their grandmother walked to the edge of the Colosseum and looked out over the charming kingdom. The sun began to set, painting the sky a beautiful rosy shade.
"I'm sorry we ran away from the house, Grandma," Alex said, trying to sound genuine, but also trying to hide a smile at the same time.
"Yeah," Connor laughed. "I feel so bad about that." He didn't even try to be sincere.
Their grandmother shook her head and looked at the sky, fighting a smile of her own. "What am I going to do with you two?" she said. "Magic lessons, I think, would do you some good. That way you won't sink any more houses."
"I totally forgot about that," Connor said. "Sorry we sank your cottage, Grandma."
"Magic lessons? Really?" Alex asked, with large eyes as she hopped up and down. "I think you've earned it," their grandmother said, "as long as your mother's fine with it."
"After all this, I don't think she'll ever be able to tell us no again," Connor said.
"What was that, Connor?" Charlotte asked, as she and Bob joined them at the edge of the Colosseum.
"Oh, Connor said, and turned bright red.
"I was just saying you may have difficulty telling us no from now on because we saved your life."
Charlotte squinted at him.
"I gave you life," she said. "You're never going to top that."
Connor tried laughing it off. "I was just kidding," he said, although there was obviously an element of truth to it.
The reunited family of five looked out over the land around them. As the sun set in the east, it also set on the reign of the Enchantress, and the twins could feel the land of story sigh with relief. It was a paradise once more. Chapter 29. For Better or for Worse. All the kings and queens left the Charming Kingdom the following day to celebrate the news of the Enchantress's defeat with their people. Red was the only one who stayed behind, because at the end of the week, she, Froggy, Goldilocks, Jack, Bob, Charlotte, and the twins all attended Rumpelstiltskin's funeral. Hearing the news of his final act and what his last words had been was hard for the seven dwarfs to swallow, so they wanted to make sure the ceremony was everything Rumpelstiltskin would have wanted. It was a small ceremony in the dwarf forest on the front lawn of the seven dwarfs' cottage. The dwarfs had made their brother a casket of glass and jewels from their mines, just as they had for Snow White. He was buried in a daisy-covered field not too far from the cottage. The dwarf said Rumpelstiltskin had spent a lot of time there when he was younger, and they knew he would have been happy to make it his final place of rest. His tombstone even read, "Here lies Rumpelstiltskin, the eighth brother of a proud dwarf family." That night, when they arrived back at the Charming Kingdom, King Chance and Queen Cinderella hosted a dinner to honor the twins and the others who had sailed on the Granny. Connor was seated at the table in the dining hall when a man sat next to him and started up a conversation.
"I'm looking forward to this," the man said. "I miss being a part of the famous charming dinner parties."
"Do I know you?" Connor asked him, and gave the man the side eye.
"Connor, it's me," the man said. "It's Froggy."
Connor shook his head and looked at the man again. He always forgot Froggy was actually human, but no matter what physical form he took, he always had the same kind eyes.
"Your grandmother changed me back as soon as we returned from the funeral," Froggy said. "The funny thing is, I had grown so accustomed to being a frog, I had forgotten she still had to change me back."
"Do you miss anything about being a frog?" Connor asked him.
"I do miss reaching the books on the top shelf without a ladder," he said. "One doesn't realize how useful frog legs can be until they lose them."
A twinkle came to Froggy's eye.
"Speaking of reading, I have something for you."
He reached into his lapel and pulled out a rolled-up stack of parchments.
"When we were setting up the camps for the trolls, I found these in the granny's wreckage," Froggy said, and handed the parchments over to Connor.
"My stories," Connor said. "I thought these were lost forever."
"I must admit, I enjoy them quite a bit," Froggy said. "You've got a real knack for storytelling, although I do have a few words of advice for you."
"What's that?" Connor asked.
"Never let Red read these," Froggy said. "I thought it was very clever, writing everyone as trolls, but she would have you executed if she read your interpretation of her."
Connor chuckled and playfully punched Froggy's shoulder.
"No, I'm serious," Froggy said.
Connor gulped. The others finally arrived and took seats around the table. Jack and Goldilocks looked down timidly at all the silverware, not knowing what to start with. Red entered the room and almost blinded everyone with the amount of jewelry she was wearing. Even for a formal dinner in the Charming Palace, Red was overdressed. Bob sat down across from Connor, looking unusually tense.
"What's wrong, Bob?" Connor said. "You look like you're about to operate on the president."
Alex cleared her throat to get Connor's attention.
He's going to propose to Mom tonight,
Alex mouthed when her mother wasn't looking.
Oh,
Connor mouthed back excitedly to Bob and his sister. He gave Bob an unsubtle wink and a thumbs up. Is everything all right, Connor? Charlotte asked.
Yes, Connor said. I'm just really looking forward to the appetizers.
Alex rolled her eyes at him. Charlotte studied her son suspiciously, afraid he was coming down with a cold. A footman presented a tray to Goldilocks with an envelope addressed to her on it.
A letter has come for you, madame, the footman said.
For me? Goldilocks said. I wonder what it could be. She opened the envelope and read the note inside. An amused but shocked grin came to her face. She wasn't sure how to feel about the news she received.
What is it? Jack asked her.
It's a note from the Red Riding Hood Castle stables, Goldilocks said.
Porridge is pregnant.
Jack and the twins couldn't contain themselves. Each one laughed harder than the next.
Buckle,
the twins said together. I knew there was something going on between them, Connor said. The dinner began, and the room was served course after course the best food the twins had ever eaten. Just before the desserts were brought out, Bob tapped the side of his glass with a spoon and got the room's attention. Alex and Connor shot excited looks at each other. This was it.
I just wanted to thank you all so much for having me tonight, Bob said. I'm fairly new to the Bailey clan, so learning about all of you and coming into this world has been, well, the adventure of my life. And seeing that I happen to be in a room filled with people who make up the greatest love stories ever told, I would like to take this moment for all it's worth.
Charlotte looked back and forth between the twins, seeing if they knew what Bob was up to. They purposefully avoided her eyes, wanting Bob to surprise her fully. He got down on one knee and presented the ring to her.
Charlotte, will you make me the happiest man in the world, both worlds, and be my wife?
Bob said. Tears instantly filled Charlotte's surprised eyes.
I,
she said. Everyone in the dining hall was on the edge of their seat.
Yes, I would love nothing more.
Bob put the ring on Charlotte's finger and hugged her. Alex began to cry, which made Connor's eyes start to water, which ultimately caused everyone else in the room to well up too. It was a picturesque moment, even by fairy tale standards.
You should get married in the palace, Cinderella said from the end of the table.
What? Charlotte asked, not believing her ears.
Please, we insist, Cinderella said, and took King Chance's hand in hers. We've been trying to think of a way to thank you for taking care of Hope when you were being held by the Enchantress. It would be our pleasure.
Charlotte didn't know what to say. She was stunned by the offer.
That is so kind, but I'm not sure I could ever...
Mom, Alex interrupted her. Speaking on behalf of every woman who has ever lived in the other world, you cannot turn down the offer to have an actual fairy tale wedding. I have to agree. It would be pretty cool, Connor said. Charlotte shrugged. The decision was basically made for her.
Well, all right then. I would be honored, thank you, she said. We'll have to get back to our jobs in the other world, but I suppose we can have a quick wedding with our friends here, and then another one for our friends back home.
Everyone raised their glasses to toast Charlotte and Bob.
May you live happily ever after, the fairy godmother said.
Red tapped her glass and stood at her seat. No one could look directly at her because of the light reflecting off her diamonds.
I would like to add to the celebration with some wonderful news of my own, she said. After speaking with the fairies and all the other kings and queens, I would like to announce that the Happily Ever After Assembly has decided to pardon Jack and Goldilocks for all their crimes and waive all warrants for their arrests as a thank you for their daring and valiant efforts in defeating the Enchantress.
The room burst into applause and congratulations for the couple. However, Jack and Goldilocks looked the least excited out of all of them.
Wonderful,
Goldilocks said through a pained smile.
Cheers,
Jack said, reluctantly raising his glass to the others toasting them.
You can move back into your old house, Jack, Red said, which is going to be really convenient because I've decided to build my country home right beside it.
Jack and Goldilocks did their best to look as if this was good news, and it excited them. Red went on and on about all the wonderful double dates they could have with her and Froggy and all the activities they could do now that they were going to be neighbors. Goldilocks leaned toward Jack.
Well, at least I won't have to feel guilty about making you live the life of an outlaw anymore, she said.
No more running from soldiers, or close encounters with ogres, or sneaking into shops to steal food, or sleeping under the stars in dangerous forests, Jack said.
It's tempting to live a quieter life, Goldilocks said, half-heartedly. Just imagine us, living the rest of our days, in your manor, watching the grass grow with Red and Charlie.
Jack and Goldilocks smirked at each other, both thinking the same thing.
They couldn't imagine a worse fate. Goldilocks whispered something into Jack's ear, and a big grin appeared on his face. The twins looked to each other, knowing something was up. Goldilocks stood from the table and walked over to Red. She endearingly wrapped her arms around her old nemesis and gave her a big hug.
"What's all this about?"
Red asked.
"I just want to thank you," Goldilocks said. "What you've done for us is so generous, we'll never be able to repay you."
Red looked like she was about to cry.
"You're so welcome," Red said. "And even though we both tried to kill each other, I tricked you into going into a house with three furious bears, you tried to throw me into a bottomless pit, I would like it very much if we put the past aside and let our friendship bloom even more."
Goldilocks smiled at her.
"I think that's a wonderful idea, Red," she said. "Now, if you'll just excuse me, I'm going to step out for a moment."
Goldilocks gave Red another hug and excused herself from the dining room. The dessert was finally served, and Connor looked up and down the table to make sure his piece of cake wasn't any smaller than the rest of theirs. "Hey, that's not fair. Red got two pieces of..." Connor stopped himself mid-complaint. Something was different. He was looking at Red without squinting. "Hey, Red, where's your necklace?"
"My necklace?" Red asked.
She reached up to her neck and screamed when she discovered her diamond necklace was missing.
"That doesn't make any sense. How could it have possibly vanished? Goldilocks!"
Both the twins turned to Jack. He wiped his mouth with his napkin, trying to hide a giant grin underneath it. Sir Lambton suddenly rushed into the dining room. He had built a reputation of constantly bringing such awful news in the past few days. The entire room went silent to hear what he had to say.
"Yes, Sir Lambton?" King Chance asked.
"Pardon my intrusion, Your Majesty," Lambton said. "With all due respect, did you give Goldilocks permission to take one of the horses from the stable, or has one just been stolen?"
Everyone's eyes immediately darted to Jack.
"Well, that's my cue," he said, and stood from the table. "Alex and Connor, it was wonderful to see you again, and I'd like to thank everyone else for a lovely evening and a wonderful dinner. Good night."
With that said, Jack ran down the dining hall and jumped out of the closest window. Red leaped up from the table and ran over to the window. Froggy and the twins followed her and peered through it. They arrived just in time to see Jack sliding down the slanted roof and landing perfectly on the back of the horse that Goldilocks held the reins of on the ground. They both waved up at Red, Froggy, and the twins. Red's necklace sparkled in the moonlight on Goldilocks' neck.
"That's my necklace!" Red yelled. "Bring that back to me at once!"
Goldilocks yanked on the reins, and she and Jack rode off into the night, happy outlaws once again. Red slammed her hands on the windowsill.
"I cannot believe I wasted an ounce of generosity on that woman!" she yelled. "Sir Lambton, I want you to put a team of your finest men together and go after her at once."
"But I don't work for you," Lambton said.
"No excuses, Lambton. Find them,"
Red demanded. Lambton looked to King Chance and Cinderella. They both shrugged.
"Right away, Queen Red,"
Lambton said with a sigh and left the room. Alex, Connor, and Froggy couldn't help but laugh as they watched their friends ride off into the night. Much as it distressed Red, they were happy to see Jack and Goldilocks return to their own habitat. Charlotte and Bob's wedding was just 2 days later. The entire palace was decorated in flowers and giant banners. Bells rang through the entire kingdom. In charming tradition, the twins' grandmother transformed their mother's nursing scrubs into a beautiful white gown and veil. Alex and Connor had never seen her look so beautiful, and both grew a little misty-eyed because of it. They were so happy to see their mom get the wedding she deserved. The ceremony was held in the ballroom, and it was so crowded, the twins thought the entire charming kingdom might have shown up. The fairy godmother conducted the ceremony herself. Princess Hope was led down the aisle by her mother and acted as a flower girl. Connor was Bob's best man, and Alex was her mother's maid of honor.
"Do you, Charlotte, take this man to be your husband?" the fairy godmother asked.
"I do," Charlotte said.
"And do you, Robert, take this woman to be your wife?"
"I do," Bob said.
The vows were only interrupted once as Red loudly blew her nose from the seats, overcome by the ceremony and still upset at losing her favorite necklace.
"By the power invested in me, by the happily ever after assembly, I now pronounce you husband and wife," the fairy godmother happily called out. "You may now kiss the bride."
The twins both turned their heads the other way, and the crowd cheered. Bob, Charlotte, and the twins then got into a carriage in the shape of a pumpkin and rode through the charming kingdom streets, waving to all the well-wishers who had gathered there. "I think this family is off to a good start," Connor said.
That evening, as soon as all the festivities were over, the fairy council met the fairy godmother at the Charming Palace. They were there on official council business and called together a meeting so exclusive no one but the fairies was allowed to be part of it. The fairy godmother waved her wand and made a door appear that led into the other world, and she and the other fairies waited for Mother Goose to arrive so the meeting could start. Mother Goose eventually emerged through the door, dragging her basket of a suitcase and a very defiant and reluctant Lester with her.
"Come on, Lester," she said. "I know you love the slot machines, but we can't stay in Vegas forever."
If her appearance was any indication, Mother Goose had done a lot of traveling in the last week. She wore a large sombrero that said Tijuana across it, a colorful Hawaiian lei around her neck, a large I Love New York t-shirt, and wooden Dutch shoes. A foam finger from a football game was still over her hand.
"Looks like you were busy, OMG," Connor said. "Hey, Sea Dog, just because you and your sister saved the world doesn't mean you gotta be sassy," Mother Goose snapped at him. "I was afraid the Enchantress was going to cross into the other world, so I went to all my favorite places before she could destroy them."
Alex looked over her worldly outfit. "I see you went to Mexico, New York, Hawaii, and a football game, but where are the shoes from?" she asked.
"Amsterdam," Mother Goose said. "They love me over there."
"I didn't know nursery rhymes were popular in Amsterdam," Connor said.
"They're not," Mother Goose said. "They don't know me as Mother Goose. They have their own nickname for me when I visit."
"What's that?" Alex asked.
"Mother Mayhem," she said.
The twins just nodded, not wanting to know any details.
"All right, let's get this hen in the oven," Mother Goose said, and clapped her hands.
She followed the fairy council into a private drawing room.
"It's about time you showed up," Tangerina said.
"Mind your beeswax, Tangy," Mother Goose said. "No, I'm serious. Your bees are getting that crap all over the floor."
The fairy shut the door tightly behind them. Naturally, the twins placed their ears up to the door and tried eavesdropping as much as possible.
"The world is still in shambles," the twins heard Emeralda's voice fade in and out. "We're slowly clearing the eastern kingdom of all the thorn bushes and vines. The northern kingdom has finally rid itself of all the poisoned food. Esmia's pillar of rock and dirt still needs to be removed. And there's one thing we haven't discussed yet that involves you, fairy godmother."
The twins looked to each other. Their curiosity consumed them whole.
"I'll be right back," Connor said.
A few moments later, he returned with empty glasses from the palace kitchen. He handed one to Alex, and they placed them over the door and up to their ears. They could hear what the fairies were saying much clearer now.
"You understand how difficult that will be for my family, don't you?" they heard their grandmother say. "We're not proposing it to be cruel. We're proposing it to be preventative," Skylene said.
"If we don't do something, it'll only be a matter of time before someone else follows in the Enchantress's footsteps," Xanthus said.
"In the end, it's your decision," Emeralda said. "It's your gift. You were chosen to be the gatekeeper. We can only tell you what we think is best for both worlds."
Alex and Connor looked at each other.
"I understand," their grandmother said. "And if it's what the rest of you think is the right thing to do, I cannot ignore that. I just don't know how I'm going to break the news to my grandchildren." "Take as much time as you need," Emeralda said.
The twins heard them start to come toward the door and ran down the hall so they wouldn't be caught listening. Their curiosity ate them alive for the rest of the day. What was the news their grandmother was going to have difficulty telling them? Why did it affect them and her ability to move between the worlds? The twins' imaginations didn't do them any favors as they thought on what the possibilities could be. Luckily, they weren't forced to suffer too long. That night after dinner, the fairy council called everyone into the ballroom to fill them in on what they had discussed.
"It's going to take some time before the world can fully recover from the damage the Enchantress caused," Emeralda said. "Esmia may be gone, but the fact is, what she tried to accomplish still remains a possibility as long as the two worlds are joined."
"So what are you saying?" Connor said.
The fairy godmother closed her eyes, not wanting to see her grandchildren's faces when they heard it.
"For the greater good of both worlds, we have decided to close the gateway between them," Emeralda said.
Alex felt like she was being told her father was dead or her mother had been kidnapped all over again. Her stomach tightened and her heart beat at a rapid pace. She felt her palms go clammy and the rest of her body go numb.
"What?"
she asked breathlessly.
"How is that even possible?"
Connor asked. He also was having an incredibly hard time processing the news.
"It's possible if we use our magic together,"
their grandmother regretfully told them.
"So what does that mean?" Connor asked. "Does that mean we'll never be able to see you again?"
Their grandmother shook her head, happy to report one small consolation.
I was able to convince the other fairies to supply us with a way to see each other, she said. She waved her wand, and two long, square mirrors with golden frames appeared. We'll be able to see each other using these mirrors whenever we want. We just won't be able to...
travel between worlds? Connor asked.
Their grandmother closed her eyes and nodded her head.
It was clearly almost as painful for her to tell them as it was for them to hear it. Alex was shaking her head profusely, and tears began running down her face.
No, Grandma, Alex pleaded. Tell me it isn't true.
I'm afraid so, honey, Grandma said.
Alex lost it completely and buried her head in her mother's side. She cried so hard she was practically silent except for her deep gasp for air. Charlotte tried to remain strong for her kids, but she was having a hard time keeping it together herself. She knew what the news meant for them.
And you're okay with this? Connor yelled, tears spilling down from his own eyes.
I hate it as much as you do, their grandmother said, but to secure the safety of both worlds, we don't have another option.
Connor could only get one word of his next question out.
When?
He said, and his voice cracked as he fought back emotion.
Tomorrow, at dusk, his grandmother said, waging her own emotional battle inside.
Alex couldn't stand to hear any more of it. She ran from the ballroom and headed up the stairs to her chambers, her hands covering her face as she went.
Alex,
Charlotte called out, but it was no use. Alex shut the door to her chambers behind her and collapsed on the floor. She cried and cried for hours and hours. She had lived through the fear of losing the fairy tale world so many times, and now it was real. It was actually being taken away from her. And of all times, her greatest fear had been realized right after she learned how much potential she had to offer this world. Right after she discovered she had a chance of being the future fairy godmother someday. Right after her uncertain future had nearly been set, it was all being taken from her. It felt like the land of stories had always been dangled in front of her and her brother, like a taunting cat toy. Every time they thought they had finally grabbed hold of it, it slipped out of their grip. She cried until her tear ducts dried up, and she couldn't cry anymore. She lay on the bed and prayed there would be some way around this nightmare. A soft knock came at the door.
Alex, can I come in? Charlotte asked from the other side.
Sure, Alex said. Charlotte walked into the room and took a seat on the bed next to her devastated daughter.
It's so unfair, Mom, Alex said. After everything we've been through, after everything we've seen, why does this have to be taken from us, too?
Charlotte rubbed her hand gently on Alex's knee. Alex sat up and looked at her mom. She was crying almost more than Alex had been.
Why are you crying so much, Mom? Alex asked. You're not losing anything.
Charlotte smiled.
Oh, but I am, honey, she said. A year ago, when you and your brother first came back from this place, I knew then I had lost my little girl forever. I watched her grow sadder and sadder the more time she's been away from this place, and I knew there was nothing I could ever do to help her, because her heart belonged somewhere else.
Mom, what are you talking about? Alex asked.
Charlotte put a hand on Alex's face and looked at her daughter through the tears in her eyes.
I'm saying, I'm not going to let you leave the place where you belong, she said.
Chapter 30. The Goodbye. Connor woke up the next morning with a mission. Before anyone else had awoken, he ran down to the stables and arranged for a carriage to take him into the countryside. He kept his activities a complete secret from anyone else, fearing someone would stop him if he made his plans known. He didn't return until that evening just before dusk, and he didn't return alone. The carriage door swung open, and three additional passengers emerged from it. Connor had brought Lady Iris, Petunia, and Rosemary back with him. After they'd spent nearly a decade suffering through constant public persecution, Connor had offered them the only chance at refuge they had ever received. And after hearing hours of Connor's descriptions, the sequestered family of women finally jumped at the chance. They were carrying as many of their belongings as they could. Lady Iris held onto the painting of her late husband, Rosemary held her favorite cooking bowl, and Petunia grasped a stack of rolled-up animal portraits under her arm. There's this thing called culinary school that you're going to love, Rosemary, Connor was saying, further listing the perks of his dimension. And just wait until I introduce you to Animal Planet, Petunia. Sir Lambton emerged down the front steps of the palace toward the carriage.
What's going on here? He asked Connor.
Connor pulled him aside so the women couldn't hear him.
I'm taking them back to the other world with us, he said.
You're what?
Lambton said.
I explained everything to them. It took them a while to understand, but they want to leave, Connor said.
Lambton, they're miserable here. They don't gain anything by staying.
If they come with us, they'll at least have a chance at starting a better life.
Why would you help them? Lambton asked.
Connor sighed and looked at the ground. Because I'll never be able to help my sister, he said. Alex isn't like me. She's going to be miserable the rest of her life without this place. At least if I bring Lady Iris with us, there'll be something worth looking forward to. Lambton had his reservations, but admired the boy's generosity nonetheless.
You're a good man, Connor Bailey, he said.
Everyone is gathered in the gardens for the final goodbye. Please escort your guests down there. Connor nodded and led the women around the side of the castle to the beautiful gardens. The charming garden was home to an exquisite display of yellow roses, pear trees, and a hedge labyrinth. It was a beautiful place to say a distressing goodbye. Froggy, Red, King Chance, Cinderella, and Mother Goose had already gathered in the gardens. Cinderella had to do a double take as Connor approached. She hadn't been expecting to see her stepmother and stepsisters walking behind him.
Stepmother? Cinderella called out. Rosemary? Petunia?
Even though they knew they were headed to the palace, Lady Iris and her daughters had almost hoped they wouldn't run into her.
Hello, Cinderella, Lady Iris said.
What are you doing here? Cinderella asked.
She looked over all the belongings they carried and answered her own question. Lady Iris thought for a moment about what to tell her.
We've decided it would be best to leave the Charming Kingdom, she said.
I see, Cinderella said. She didn't argue with her stepmother, knowing her reasons better than anyone.
Where are you headed?
Lady Iris hesitated to say.
The other world, as fate would have it, she said. I think a fresh start would do the girls and me some good. We'll be able to live in a place where people won't judge us as harshly, or throw rocks at the house, or boo us when we leave it.
All Cinderella could do was nod. She might have built a gate around the property, but she could never take away all the oppression they faced on a daily basis.
What are you going to do there? Cinderella asked.
The boy was telling me of a place called Florida that I might be interested in, Lady Iris said.
I'm going to be a chef, Rosemary said. I'm going to do something with animals, Petunia said. They have so many more animals in the other world than we have. There's apparently this creature called the honey badger that I hear is fascinating.
Cinderella was pleased for them, but couldn't deny she was sorry to be losing the only family she had outside the king and princess.
I'm so happy for you, she said, although they knew better.
We're doing this for you too, Cinderella, Lady Iris said. You won't have any black sheep to worry about lingering around now. You can raise Princess Hope without ever having to tell her about us if you'd like.
Cinderella nodded. But I plan on telling Hope everything about you, she said. Especially the part about her grandmother helping a small band of courageous sailors defeat the evil enchantress who took her from us.
Lady Iris hadn't expected them to remember her request.
Did they tell you I assisted? She asked.
No, they didn't have to, Cinderella said.
She pulled a ring off her finger she wore next to her wedding ring. It was her stepmother's wedding ring.
The wand it was a part of was destroyed, but I recognized the ring. Any girl would recognize their own mother's wedding ring. I figured you'd want it back.
Lady Iris stared down at the ring.
I don't know what to say, she said,
touched by the gesture. The girl she had been so cruel to was still showing her kindness even now.
Thank you, Cinderella. You continue to grow into a much better woman than I could ever be.
Cinderella smiled. She hugged her stepmother and her stepsisters for the first and final time. Red and Froggy took their lead to start their own goodbyes.
I'm going to miss you, old chap, Froggy said to Connor, and gave him a giant hug.
I'm going to miss you too, Connor said, and just to let you know, whenever I think about you, I'm always going to remember a giant frog. Froggy chuckled.
I wouldn't have it any other way, he said.
Red kissed Connor on the cheek.
You are the sweetest boy I know, she said.
Then again, I rarely socialize with anyone of a lower age, or social class.
Hey, kid, Mother Goose said, and pulled Connor aside.
She slipped a blue poker chip into his hand.
If you're ever in Monte Carlo, go to the roulette table in the northwest corner of the Lumiere des Etoiles Casino and bet this on black.
She winked at him and patted him firmly on the back.
Thanks, Connor said.
The fairy council arrived promptly a few moments later. They took their positions in a big half-circle around the gardens to begin sealing the gateway between the worlds.
We're just waiting for the fairy godmother and the others, Emeralda said. If those of you leaving this world would please take a step forward.
Connor, Lady Iris, Rosemary and Petunia, all edged forward on the grass, stepping into the center of the crescent shape the council formed.
"Here they come now," Skyline said.
Connor turned to see his grandmother, Charlotte, Bob, and his sister walking down from the palace. Bob was carrying one of the golden mirrors his grandmother had